Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to your first 2019 episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewire.news podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that is pretty sure that 2019 is drunk already, if the news is any indication. I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo. Rewire.news is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web. And the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
Welcome to our new listeners and welcome to 2019. And Jess.
Yeah?
You and I have been friends for a while now. Like 7 years, 8 years?
At least,
we've been really,
yeah.
At least. And I mean, I think you could probably say that our friendship was forged in the fires of the birth control benefit, also known as the contraception mandate, right?
Oh, God, it's true. I mean, so what? We've been writing and discussing the birth control benefit for something like going on 7 years now. I mean, Remember those days when we used to be upset with the Obama administration because they were kowtowing to the religious right?
I honestly would kill to go back to the time when I was annoyed with Obama for continuing to compromise with the religious right, because at least he gave a shit about the contraception mandate, aka the birth control benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And as frustrating as it was to watch the Obama administration play footsie with the religious right, he was committed to providing copay-free contraceptive coverage in private health insurance plans, right?
Right. And unlike Trump, who is literally trying to blow up the birth control benefit beyond any kind of recognition.
And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the ways in which Trump is fucking with the birth control benefit, including by ignoring legal norms to do so.
Trump ignoring legal norms? Get out.
Ah!
Get out. I don't believe
it. I'm shocked. I'm clutching my chest. I'm so shocked. We're also going to talk about why Trump's efforts to take a sledgehammer to the birth control benefit will have devastating consequences for millions of people in this country. And by the time you're done listening to this episode, you're going to understand what the Administrative Procedures Act is.
Yes, that is my favorite. I love the APA. I love the APA. I love the APA.
Jess is singing her I Love the APA song. Settle down, lady. We know you love the APA.
It's hard. I'm sorry. I just can't calm down when it comes to the APA. And this is so true. It totally hits me right in my wonky nerd bone. I love it.
I know you love the APA, Jess. And hopefully by the end of this episode, our listeners will understand what the APA is and how it's a key part of the lawmaking process that a lot of people don't know about, they don't understand necessarily, because it isn't sexy.
But damn it, it is sexy. Administrative law is sexy. I will die on this hill.
Only Jess would like come screaming out about how the APA is sexy. So not everyone has been ass deep in the birth control benefit for 7 years like Jessica and I have. So we're going to talk about the birth control benefit, also known as the contraception mandate. We're going to talk about how it came into existence. We're going to talk about what the hell it is. So Jess, what is the birth control benefit?
This is an excellent question, Imani. The birth control benefit is a rule that helps give meaning to part of the Affordable Care Act. And talking about the birth control benefit is the perfect chance for me to nerd out on administrative law and agency rulemaking. So let's do it.
Yes, let's do it. Let's talk about federal agencies and the birth control benefit. So federal agencies can only act in certain circumstances. One of those circumstances is when they are directed to either by Congress or the president. In this instance, the statutory language of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, says that the preventative services like contraception must be available at no additional cost and copay. So that's a really great thing, right? But the question is, how do we make that statutory mandate happen? And that's where agencies come in.
Right. So the thinking is that agencies are staffed by experts and are in the best position to turn those statutory dreams, like contraception available at no additional cost and no copay, into reality. And they do that by issuing rules. So What are rules? Rules are like statutes in that they can be enforced by the court, so they're kind of law-like. And agencies make rules, and rules are like statutes, right? But we have a checks and balances problem going here, because unlike members of Congress who also write laws, we don't elect agency officials, right? They're appointed. So at no point here has the public weighed in, right?
Right. And so the question becomes, how in a representative democracy can the public have a say in the rules that agencies make that affect their lives? Rules like the birth control benefit.
So it turns out we've got a statute to answer that question, and it's called the Administrative Procedure Act, and it's what I've been shouting about all episodes so far. It's the APA, and it makes my wonky heart go pitter-patter. The APA sets out in pretty clear terms what federal agencies can and cannot do. The APA also tells federal agencies how to go about making rules, and that agencies are to include the public in that rulemaking process, and that's to keep checks and balances in place.
So that was a lot of words, Jess, and our listeners may be starting to have their eyes glaze over a little bit. So why don't you give an example of what the APA does and how it operates?
Right. No, this is a good idea, Imani. So the APA requires agencies to have a certain amount of transparency when they start rulemaking. The agency can't just say, for example, hey, surprise, here's a new rule on the birth control benefit. It has to give a reason for why it's acting and then show that those reasons advance whatever the issue the rule is designed to address, like getting people access to contraception without the hurdles of copays and additional costs.
And it's not just including the public, right? The APA has other really important requirements as well. For example, the regulations that are proffered by these agencies can't be what's known in legal parlance as arbitrary, capricious, or contrary to established law. Mm-hmm. That's essentially legal jargon for federal agencies can't just do whatever the fuck they want or issue regulations that violate the law.
Right, exactly. So, for example, if tomorrow the Environmental Protection Agency said it was issuing a rule promoting coal-fired automobiles, there'd be a pretty good argument that rule was arbitrary and capricious, right? Well, because coal-fired automobiles from the agency charged with protecting the environment.
Yeah, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, right?
And that's basically arbitrary and capricious, right? It's a what?
Exactly. It's a what? So what does the APA say about rulemaking, and precisely how badly did the Trump administration fuck it up?
Oh, boy. So to answer the second question first, they fucked it up real bad. And to show how bad they fucked it up, we're going to go through the timeline of this fuckery, explaining what they did and how it violates the APA. And by the end of it, listeners, you'll know a lot more about how this is supposed to work when someone who even remotely cares about the law is in office. And we'll get to that after the break. All right, Imani, are you ready to go through this timeline of just how bad the Trump administration has screwed up in trying to issue new birth control rules?
Describe what you mean by ready.
Did you take a multivitamin?
I took a multivitamin. I took a Clonopin. I've had a full glass of water. So, yeah, let's get into this. Talk to me about this, Jess.
All right. You're hydrated. That's what's important.
Exactly.
Okay. So way back in May 2017, Trump announced via an executive order that he was going to direct federal agencies to start including moral and religious objections to the birth control benefit. Now, that pronouncement, that executive order, arguably triggers agencies like Health and Human Services and the Department of Labor, those agencies that implement the ACA, to begin drafting those new rules. At the time, Trump said the new rules were needed because of all the business owners being oppressed by having to provide non-discriminatory health benefits to their employees. And, of course, that's bullshit.
Suffer the poor employers who have to provide birth control benefit to their employees. Blech.
Right? I mean, it's garbage. And like we said earlier, agencies can't just start drafting rules based on bullshit and garbage. They need a verifiable reason to otherwise do that, or the rule is considered to be beyond the scope of their power and arbitrary and capricious.
And that makes sense, right? I mean, just think of the conservative lawmakers who are pushing all of these abortion restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Before Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt, for example, they were pulling restrictions out of their asses, just directly plucking all of these abortion restrictions out of their asses, and then claiming that those restrictions were constitutional because they, quote unquote, and imagine that I'm doing severely sarcastic quotes, because they, quote unquote, advanced patient safety. It wasn't until the Supreme Court said, nope, you need evidence to back up these claims about advancing patient safety. Why? Well, because there's no evidence that, for example, making an abortion clinic retrofit itself to meet the same architectural standards as a standalone surgical center, there's absolutely no evidence that these types of regulations actually advance patient safety.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court said, you can't just straight up offer bullshit and then make that a basis of legislating.
Exactly. And that's a really good example because it's the same concept with agency action. So normally, once an agency has direction to act, like in this case, the executive order, it then gets to work to doing a bunch of research and drafting what we call a proposed rule. And a proposed rule is exactly what it sounds like.
Wait. Is a proposed rule proposed?
It is. I mean, you know, this is dry and boring, but also some of it is like, the Trump administration is screwing stuff up that is as clear as like, hey, a proposed rule. It's a first draft. It's the agency's real first serious crack at what would eventually become a fully enforceable regulation. In doing that work, sometimes that includes soliciting comments from the public before the drafting begins, if it's like a really complex rule, right? But once the agency has the text of the proposed rule, regardless if they ask for public comment before or not, once they have that text, that's when the public for sure gets to weigh in.
And here's the thing about proposed rules. Ultimately, they read a lot like legislation. I mean, let's be honest. They often have a preamble, just like legislation does. They often have something that describes the rule and what it's trying to achieve, just like legislation does.
Yep.
And then it will have a section where the federal agency basically has to show its work.
Right.
Right? It has to cite the data and the information that they use to support the rule.
Right. And that's super important, again, because, you know, when Congress passes statutes, there's debate, there's hearings, there's all of this thing that is, you know, at least supposed to be transparent that gives us as the public an opportunity to weigh in. And so this is the process to try and make that equivalent for federal agencies. So we get the preamble, we get all that stuff, and then we get the text of the rule. And when that's published, the agency has to start taking comments from the public. This is called a notice and comment period, and it's really, really, really important. Agencies will leave these proposed rules open for a period of time. This can usually be like 30 or 60 days, but it can be even longer for really complex rules. And that time is when they start to collect comments from the public.
And this is a really crucial period of time. This is the period of time during which the public literally gets to tell the agency what it thinks about these proposed rules. And the agency isn't supposed to just sort of haphazardly ask for comments and then ignore what the public thinks and go ahead and do whatever the hell it wants to anyway. The agency is supposed to take those comments, read each and every single one of them, and sometimes we're talking about like 110,000 comments that the agencies need to rifle through, and they need to consider those comments and consider whether or not they need to change the proposed rule in response to those comments.
You'd be surprised to hear that that didn't happen with the Trump administration, though.
Oh! I am shocked! I cannot believe it!
Yeah, so in October 2017, after that executive order, agencies responded to it by issuing what they called interim final rules.
Okay, Jess, what the hell is an interim final rule?
That's an excellent question, Imani. So when an agency finds that it has good cause to issue the final draft, the final version of its rule, without first publishing that proposed rule, that, you know, first draft we talked about, it often characterizes the rule as an interim final rule, or an IFR for short. This type of rule becomes effective immediately upon publication, and so that means it's enforceable right away. But it's without first getting the public to weigh in. Now, in most cases, the agency stipulates that it'll alter this interim rule if, you know, when the public weighs in, it shows that it's screwed up somehow. But if the agency decides not to make changes to the interim rule, it'll usually publish a brief final rule in the Federal Register, and that's the place where all of these rules exist and live and are published, confirming that decision. And so that's what the Trump administration has been doing here. And we have that final rule scheduled to happen to publish on Monday, the 14th, unless it's blocked by a court.
Wait, so I want to just go back and sort of walk through this again. So what you're saying here is generally an agency will issue interim final rules. It will wait for the public to comment on those rules, and then it will take into account the public's comments, and it will edit the interim final rules, and then it will issue a final rule. And then that final rule will be scheduled to be issued and published and go into effect on a certain date. In this case, it's January 14th. But here you're saying the Trump administration essentially issued the final rule that was almost exactly the same as the interim final rule and completely ignored the entire public notice and comment period and decided, fuck it, this is what we want to do. We don't care what the public thinks. We're destroying the birth control benefit. Come at me, bro.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a pretty fair synopsis.
Okay. I just wanted to check and make sure we all had that correct.
You know, and it's a problem because IFRs are a common rulemaking tools. You know, I mean, it's important to have the public weigh in, but agencies do a lot of rulemaking, and IFRs are a process that makes sure that our rulemaking doesn't grind to a halt, right? Like, so things actually get done. And like I said, they can be a way for agencies to edit rules that are in effect, which is what the administration's claiming here, but no.
Because, and yeah, and but no, because the Trump rules were not a simple edit, right? The Trump rules regarding the birth control benefit dramatically rewrote the exemptions to the contraception benefit. And those are the kinds of changes that the public is supposed to have an opportunity to weigh in on and that the agency is supposed to consider before doing anything.
So we've talked a lot already about the public weighing in. We should probably explain for our listeners how folks can actually comment and weigh in when an agency is in rulemaking.
Well, usually there'll be a government website set up where you can go and you can read the rule and you can just add your comment onto the website. You can send emails to the agency in question. There are oftentimes organizations that will coordinate to compile comments and send them to the agency in question. And those comments can actually make a real difference.
They really can.
If you have an administration that gives a shit, that is, right? During the Obama administration, for example, when they were considering changes to the birth control benefit, religious conservatives flooded the administration with comments to the point that the administration just threw up its hands and said, fuck it, we're at an impasse. They literally couldn't find a way to square the notion that employees should have access to contraceptive coverage with the religious right who were screaming about how they didn't think that they should have to provide that coverage to their employees because they held a religious or a moral objection to doing so.
Right. I mean, that's rulemaking in good faith.
Right. That's what you're supposed to do. Provide a rule, listen to comments, be like, all right, we'll take into effect your comments and then make a final rule. But that's not what the Trump administration did.
Nope.
So what they did is they issued this IFR in October 2017 and they say it's effective immediately. But, you know, if you want to comment, feel free to comment. We may take into account your comment, you know, just for funsies.
This is just so clearly not a good faith effort. I mean, you know, it's like incredulous to say that, but it's not a good faith effort. So what happens when we have agencies kind of going rogue and doing this rulemaking that is not based in good faith? What remedy do we have? What agency, when agencies are overreaching, what are we supposed to do?
You gotta sue the bastards. And that's exactly what some of the state attorneys generals led by California and Pennsylvania successfully did. They sued to block the IFRs from going into effect, in part based on the argument that the administration had violated the APA, the Administrative Procedure Act, by not allowing for this crucial notice and comment period. Then, in November 2018, while that litigation over those IFRs was still proceeding, the administration essentially pulled a final rule out of its ass and decided, you know what? These final rules are going to go into effect on January 14th. And these final rules say that employers, whether they're religiously affiliated or not, whether they're for profit or not, are entitled to exempt themselves from the birth control benefit, not based just on religious convictions, but on moral objections as well. And now these final rules, which the Trump administration issued, completely ignoring the notice and comment period, are supposed to supersede the IFRs that California and Pennsylvania were successful in blocking. They are supposed to supersede those IFRs when they take effect on the 14th. Now, the problem is the new final rules are slightly different and slightly worse than the interim final rules. But California and Pennsylvania and the states that are involved in that litigation sued to block the interim final rules. So now they are rushing to amend their complaints and go back to court so that they can sue to block the final rules as well, while the litigation over the interim final rules is still ongoing.
This is chaos.
It's absolute fucking chaos. Like, trying to explain it is making my brain ache. And I sort of feel bad for the listeners. I feel like we need to send them all bottles of whiskey just for making it this far into the episode, because that's how chaotic the Trump administration has made this process. And that's the zeal with which they are trying to strip people of contraceptive coverage. I mean, these final rules basically maintain the provisions from the interim final rules with relatively few changes whatsoever, despite the fact that there were 110,000 comments.
110,000 comments?
110,000 comments!
For context, listeners, that's a lot of comments on an agency rule.
I love that you said that. For context, that's a shit ton of comments.
But also, it's so completely confirmation that the administration was never interested in the public's comment in support of the benefit, and that these new rules are arbitrary and capricious, right?
That's exactly right. And the question now is, what are the courts going to do about it? What they've said so far is that the IFRs are blocked. Hopefully, when California and Pennsylvania and the states that are suing in concert with them go to court again, the courts will block the final rules as well. Otherwise, these new final rules will go into effect and birth control coverage will be essentially decimated for everyone not living in a state that has state laws requiring contraceptive coverage.
So we are in January 2019 and the Trump administration may or may not successfully blow up the birth control benefit. And this is something that you and I have been talking about and yelling about and writing about and agitating about for 7 damn years now, Imani. Time is a flat circle.
It's a flat circle, man. And you know what? I really do long for the days when I was just angry with the Obama administration for kowtowing to the religious right. I yearn for those days because at least the Obama administration was willing to listen and they were dedicated to the idea that people are entitled to contraceptive coverage. The Trump administration doesn't give a shit. And so I guess we're just going to have to wait and find out and see what the court does.
And listeners, you now know more about the Administrative Procedures Act than I'm guessing the entirety of the Trump administration.
So pat yourself on the back and have yourself a nice cup of coffee because you've earned it. Thank you for listening. That's going to wrap up our show for today. You can follow me on Twitter at Angry Black Lady. You can follow Jess on Twitter at Hegemommy, H-E-G-E-M-O-M-M-Y. You can join our Facebook group, Boom Lawyered. And if you have further questions, want to continue the conversation, please hit us up on the tubes.
Please do. And Imani also, I just want to say, wrote a really great explainer of the litigation that we mentioned in this podcast. So be sure and pop over to rewire.news for her ABLC explainer on that. Is really just solid. And thank you all. We will see you on the tubes. Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason-Piclo and Imani Gandhi. This episode was produced by Mark Folletti, who is also our executive producer. And the rewire.news editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.